Chapter 1. A very little boy stood upon a heap of gravel for the honor of Rum Alley. He was throwing stones at howling urchins from Devil's Row who were circling madly about the heap and pelting at him. His infantile countenance was livid with fury. His small body was writhing in the delivery of great, crimson oaths. "Run, Jimmy, run! Dale get yeas," screamed a retreating Rum Alley child. "Naw," responded Jimmy with a valiant roar, "des amix can't make me run." Howls of renewed wrath went up from Devil's Row throats. Tattered gamins on the right made a furious assault on the gravel heap. On their small, convulsed faces there shone the grins of true assassins. As they charged, they threw stones and cursed in shrill chorus. The little champion of Rum Alley stumbled precipitately down the other side. His coat had been torn to shreds in a scuffle, and his hat was gone. He had bruises on 20 parts of his body, and blood was dripping from a cut in his head. His wan features wore a look of a tiny, insane demon. On the ground, children from Devil's Row closed in on their antagonist. He crooked his left arm defensively about his head and fought with cursing fury. The little boys ran to and fro, dodging, hurling stones and swearing in barbaric trebles. From a window of an apartment house that upreared its form from amid squat, ignorant stables, there leaned a curious woman. Some laborers, unloading a scow at a dock at the river, paused for a moment and regarded the fight. The engineer of a passive tugboat hung lazily to a railing and watched. Over on the island, a worm of yellow convicts came from the shadow of a building and crawled slowly along the river's bank. A stone had smashed into Jimmy's mouth. Blood was bubbling over his chin and down upon his ragged shirt. Tears made furrows on his dirt-stained cheeks. His thin legs had begun to tremble and turn weak, causing his small body to reel. His roaring curses of the first part of the fight had changed to a blasphemous chatter. In the yells of the whirling mob of Devil's Row children there were notes of joy like songs of triumphant savagery. The little boy seemed to leer gloatingly at the blood upon the other child's face. Down the avenue came boastfully sauntering a lad of 16 years, although the chronic sneer of an ideal manhood already sat upon his lips. His hat was tipped with an air of challenge over his eye. Between his teeth, a cigar stump was tilted at the angle of defiance. He walked with a certain swing of the shoulders which appalled the timid. He glanced over into the vacant lot in which the little raving boys from Devil's Row seethed about the shrieking and tearful child from Rum Alley. "Gee," he murmured with interest. "A scrap. Gee." He strode over to the cursing circle, swinging his shoulders in a manner which denoted that he held victory in his fists. He approached at the back of one of the most deeply engaged of the Devil's Row children. "Ah, what the hell," he said, and smote the deeply engaged one on the back of the head. The little boy fell to the ground and gave a hoarse, tremendous howl. He scrambled to his feet, and perceiving, evidently, the size of his assailant, ran quickly off, shouting alarms. The entire Devil's Row party followed him. They came to a stand a short distance away and yelled taunting oaths at the boy with a chronic sneer. The latter, momentarily, paid no attention to them. "What the hell, Jimmy?" he asked of the small champion. Jimmy wiped his blood-wet features with his sleeve. "Well, it was this way, Pete, see. I was going to lick that Riley kid and they all pitched on me." Some Rum Alley children now came forward. The party stood for a moment exchanging vainglorious remarks with Devil's Row. A few stones were thrown at long distances, and words of challenge passed between small warriors. Then the Rum Alley contingent turned slowly in the direction of their home street. They began to give, each to each, distorted versions of the fight. Causes of retreat in particular cases were magnified. Blows dealt in the fight were enlarged to catapultian power, and stones thrown were alleged to have hurtled with infinite accuracy. Valor grew strong again, and the little boys began to swear with great spirit. "Ah, we blokies kin licked a whole damn row," said a child, swaggering. Little Jimmy was striving to staunch the flow of blood from his cut lips. Scowling, he turned upon the speaker. "Ah, where de hell was yeah when I was doing all day fightin'?" he demanded. "Yous kids makes me tired." "Ah, go on," replied the other argumentatively. Jimmy replied with heavy contempt. "Ah, yous can't fight, Blue Billy. I can lick yeah wid one hon." "Ah, go on," replied Billy again. "Ah," said Jimmy threateningly. "Ah," said the other in the same tone. They struck at each other, clinched, and rolled over on the cobblestones. "Smash him, Jimmy, kick de damn guts out of him," yelled Pete, the lad with the chronic sneer, in tones of delight. The small combatants pounded and kicked, scratched and tore. They began to weep and their curses struggled in their throats with sobs. The other little boys clasped their hands and wriggled their legs in excitement. They formed a bobbing circle about the pair. A tiny spectator was suddenly agitated. "Cheese it, Jimmy, cheese it. Here comes your fader," he yelled. The circle of little boys instantly parted. They drew away and waited in ecstatic awe for that which was about to happen. The two little boys fighting in the modes of 4,000 years ago, did not hear the warning. Up the avenue there plodded slowly a man with sullen eyes. He was carrying a dinner pail and smoking an applewood pipe. As he neared the spot where the little boys strove, he regarded them listlessly. But suddenly he roared an oath and advanced upon the rolling fighters. "Here, you Jim, get up, now, while I belt your life out, you damn disorderly brat." He began to kick into the chaotic mass on the ground. The boy Billy felt a heavy boot strike his head. He made a furious effort and disentangled himself from Jimmy. He tottered away, damning. Jimmy rose painfully from the ground and, confronting his father, began to curse him. His parent kicked him. "Come home, now," he cried, "and stop your jawing, or I'll lam the everlasting head off yays." They departed. The man paced placidly along with the applewood emblem of serenity between his teeth. The boy followed a dozen feet in the rear. He swore luridly, for he felt that it was degradation for one who aimed to be some vague soldier, or a man of blood with a sort of sublime license, to be taken home by a father. Chapter 2. Eventually they entered into a dark region where, from a careening building, a dozen gruesome doorways gave up loads of babies to the street and the gutter. A wind of early autumn raised yellow dust from cobbles and swirled it against 100 windows. Long streamers of garments fluttered from fire escapes. In all unhandy places there were buckets, brooms, rags and bottles. In the street infants played or fought with other infants or sat stupidly in the way of vehicles. Formidable women, with uncombed hair and disordered dress, gossiped while leaning on railings, or screamed in frantic quarrels. Withered persons, in curious postures of submission to something, sat smoking pipes in obscure corners. A thousand odors of cooking food came forth to the street. The building quivered and creaked from the weight of humanity stamping about in its bowels. A small ragged girl dragged a red, bawling infant along the crowded ways. He was hanging back, baby-like, bracing his wrinkled, bare legs. The little girl cried out, "Ah, Tommy, come on. Dare's Jimmy and Fader. Don't be a pullin' me back." She jerked the baby's arm impatiently. He fell on his face, roaring. With a second jerk she pulled him to his feet, and they went on. With the obstinacy of his order, he protested against being dragged in a chosen direction. He made heroic endeavors to keep on his legs, denounce his sister and consume a bit of orange peeling which he chewed between the times of his infantile orations. As the sullen-eyed man, followed by the blood-covered boy, drew near, the little girl burst into reproachful cries. "Ah, Jimmy, you's been fighting again." The urchin swelled disdainfully. "Ah, what de hell, Mag. See?" The little girl upbraided him, "You's allus fightin', Jimmy, and yeh knows it puts mutter out when yeh's come home half dead, and it's like we'll all get a poundin'." She began to weep. The babe threw back his head and roared at his prospects. "Ah, what de hell?" cried Jimmy. "Shut up or I'll smack your moot. See?" As his sister continued her lamentations, he suddenly swore and struck her. The little girl reeled and, recovering herself, burst into tears and quaveringly cursed him. As she slowly retreated her brother advanced dealing her cuffs. The father heard and turned about. "Stop that, Jim, d'ye hear? Leave your sister alone on the street. It's like I can never beat any sense into your damned wooden head." The urchin raised his voice in defiance to his parent and continued his attacks. The babe bawled tremendously, protesting with great violence. During his sister's hasty maneuvers, he was dragged by the arm. Finally the procession plunged into one of the gruesome doorways. They crawled up dark stairways and along cold, gloomy halls. At last the father pushed open a door and they entered a lighted room in which a large woman was rampant. She stopped in a career from a seething stove to a pan-covered table. As the father and children filed in she peered at them. "Eh, what? Been fighting again, by God." She threw herself upon Jimmy. The urchin tried to dart behind the others and in the scuffle the babe, Tommy, was knocked down. He protested with his usual vehemence, because they had bruised his tender shins against a table leg. The mother's massive shoulders heaved with anger. Grasping the urchin by the neck and shoulder she shook him until he rattled. She dragged him to an unholy sink, and, soaking a rag in water, began to scrub his lacerated face with it. Jimmy screamed in pain and tried to twist his shoulders out of the clasp of the huge arms. The babe sat on the floor watching the scene, his face in contortions like that of a woman at a tragedy. The father, with a newly laden pipe in his mouth, crouched on a backless chair near the stove. Jimmy's cries annoyed him. He turned about and bellowed at his wife. "Let the damned kid alone for a minute, will ye, Mary? You're all as pounding him. When I come nights I can't get no rest 'cause you're all as pounding a kid. Let up, d'ye hear? Don't be all as pounding a kid." The woman's operations on the urchin instantly increased in violence. At last she tossed him to a corner where he limply lay cursing and weeping. The wife put her immense hands on her hips and with a chieftain-like stride approached her husband. "Ho," she said, with a great grunt of contempt. "And what in the devil are you sticking your nose for?" The babe crawled under the table and, turning, peered out cautiously. The ragged girl retreated and the urchin in the corner drew his legs carefully beneath him. The man puffed his pipe calmly and put his great mudded boots on the back part of the stove. "Go to hell," he murmured, tranquilly. The woman screamed and shook her fists before her husband's eyes. The rough yellow of her face and neck flared suddenly crimson. She began to howl. He puffed imperturbably at his pipe for a time, but finally arose and began to look out at the window into the darkening chaos of backyards. "You've been drinking, Mary," he said. "You'd better let up on the bot, old woman, or you'll get done." "You're a liar." "I ain't had a drop," she roared in reply. They had a lurid altercation, in which they damned each other's souls with frequence. The babe was staring out from under the table, his small face working in his excitement. The ragged girl went stealthily over to the corner where the urchin lay. "Are yez hurted much, Jimmy?" she whispered timidly. "Not a damn bit." "See?" growled the little boy. "Will I wash dey blood?" "Naw. Will I? When I catch dat Riley kid I'll break his face. Dat's right. See?" He turned his face to the wall as if resolved to grimly bide his time. In the quarrel between husband and wife, the woman was victor. The man grabbed his hat and rushed from the room, apparently determined upon a vengeful drunk. She followed to the door and thundered at him as he made his way downstairs. She returned and stirred up the room until her children were bobbing about like bubbles. "Get out of de way," she persistently bawled, waving feet with her disheveled shoes near the heads of her children. She shrouded herself, puffing and snorting, in a cloud of steam at the stove, and eventually extracted a frying pan full of potatoes that hissed. She flourished it. "Come to your suppers, now," she cried with sudden exasperation. "Hurry up, now, or I'll help ye." The children scrambled hastily. With prodigious clatter they arranged themselves at table. The babe sat with his feet dangling high from a precarious infant chair and gorged his small stomach. Jimmy forced, with feverish rapidity, the grease-enveloped pieces between his wounded lips. Maggie, with side glances of fear of interruption, ate like a small pursued tigress. The mother sat blinking at them. She delivered reproaches, swallowed potatoes and drank from a yellow-brown bottle. After a time her mood changed and she wept as she carried little Tommy into another room and laid him to sleep with his fists doubled in an old quilt of faded red and green grandeur. Then she came and moaned by the stove. She rocked to and fro upon a chair, shedding tears and crooning miserably to the two children about their poor mother and yer fader, damn his soul. The little girl plodded between the table and the chair with a dishpan on it. She tottered on her small legs beneath burdens of dishes. Jimmy sat nursing his various wounds. He cast furtive glances at his mother. His practiced eye perceived her gradually emerge from a muddled mist of sentiment until her brain burned in drunken heat. He sat breathless. Maggie broke a plate. The mother started to her feet as if propelled. "Good God," she howled. Her eyes glittered on her child with sudden hatred. The fervent red of her face turned almost to purple. The little boy ran to the halls, shrieking like a monk in an earthquake. He floundered about in darkness until he found the stairs. He stumbled, panic-stricken, to the next floor. An old woman opened a door. A light behind her threw a flare on the urchin's quivering face. "Eh, God, child, what is it dis time? Is your fader beatin' your mudder, or your mudder beatin' your fader?" Chapter 3. Jimmy and the old woman listened long in the hall. Above the muffled roar of conversation, the dismal wailings of babies at night, the thumping of feet in unseen quarters and rooms, mingled with the sound of varied hoarse shoutings in the street and the rattling of wheels over cobbles, they heard the screams of the child and the roars of the mother die away to a feeble moaning and a subdued bass muttering. The old woman was an gnarled and leathery personage who could don, at will, an expression of great virtue. She possessed a small music box capable of one tune, and a collection of God bless yeas pitched in assorted keys of fervency. Each day she took a position upon the stones of Fifth Avenue, where she crooked her legs under her and crouched immovable and hideous, like an idol. She received daily a small sum in pennies. It was contributed, for the most part, by persons who did not make their homes in that vicinity. Once, when a lady had dropped her purse on the sidewalk, the gnarled woman had grabbed it and smuggled it with great dexterity beneath her cloak. When she was arrested, she had cursed the lady into a partial swoon, and with her aged limbs, twisted from rheumatism, had almost kicked the stomach out of a huge policeman whose conduct upon that occasion she referred to when she said, "The police, damn 'em." "Eh, Jimmy, it's cursed shame," she said. "Go, now, like a deer and buy me a can, and if your mutter raises hell all night yeas can sleep here." Jimmy took a tendered tin pail and seven pennies and departed. He passed into the side door of a saloon and went to the bar. Straining up on his toes, he raised the pail and pennies as high as his arms would let him. He saw two hands thrust down and take them. Directly the same hands let down the filled pail and he left. In front of the gruesome doorway he met a lurching figure. It was his father, swaying about on uncertain legs. "Give me dey can. See?" said the man, threateningly. "Ah, come off. I got dis can fair dat ole woman and it I'd be dirty swipe it. See?" cried Jimmy. The father wrenched the pail from the urchin. He grasped it in both hands and lifted it to his mouth. He glued his lips to the under edge and tilted his head. His hairy throat swelled until it seemed to grow near his chin. There was a tremendous gulping movement and the beer was gone. The man caught his breath and laughed. He hit his son on the head with the empty pail. As it rolled clanging into the street, Jimmy began to scream and kicked repeatedly at his father's shins. "Look at dey dirt what yeah ya done me," he yelled. "Dey ole woman ill be raisin' hell." He retreated to the middle of the street, but the man did not pursue. He staggered toward the door. "I'll club hello to yeah when I catch yeah ya," he shouted, and disappeared. During the evening he had been standing against a bar drinking whiskeys and declaring to all comers, confidentially, "My home regler live in hell. Damn's place. Regler hell. Why do I come and drink whiskey here this way? 'Cause home regler live in hell." Jimmy waited a long time in the street and then crept warily up through the building. He passed with great caution the door of the gnarled woman, and finally stopped outside his home and listened. He could hear his mother moving heavily about among the furniture of the room. She was chanting in a mournful voice, occasionally interjecting bursts of volcanic wrath at the father, who, Jimmy judged, had sunk down on the floor or in a corner. "Why dey blazes don't share try take keep Jim from fightin'? I'll break her jaw," she suddenly bellowed. The man mumbled with drunken indifference. "Ah, why dey hell? Was odds? Why makes kick?" "Because he tears his clothes, yea a damn fool," cried the woman in supreme wrath. The husband seemed to become roused. "Go to hell," he thundered fiercely in reply. There was a crash against the door and something broke into clattering fragments. Jimmy partially suppressed a howl and darted down the stairway. Below he paused and listened. He heard howls and curses, groans and shrieks, confusingly in chorus as if a battle were raging. Withal was the crash of splintering furniture. The eyes of the urchin glared in fear that one of them would discover him. Curious faces appeared in doorways, and whispered comments passed to and fro. "Old Johnson's raising hell again." Jimmy stood until the noises ceased and the other inhabitants of the tenement had all yawned and shut their doors. Then he crawled upstairs with the caution of an invader of a